Hi, you're listening to She Shield, your one-stop pod for all topics personal safety. I'm your host, Sophia, and my goal is to help educate women and men on concealed carry, martial arts, and all topics self-defense. This episode is brought to you by Big Tech's Ordnance, your soon-to-be favorite retailer for all of your firearms needs. BTO believes in only selling high-quality gear for responsibly armed citizens, as well as providing pre- and post-sale support. BTO values firearms training and supports firearms instructors nationwide. They even pay for their staff to train with high-level instructors to ensure that when you as the consumer reach out, you are taken care of. Before I announce our guest speaker today, I just want to thank you all for 20,000 downloads. We passed that about a week and a half ago. I took my time to announce that, but thank you, listeners, so much. The best way to help the podcast is to leave a review. So if you could do that by scrolling up to the top of wherever you're listening right now, hit that star and leave your honest review. Hopefully it's 5 stars. That really, really helps podcasts get on the, just get out there. So if you have time today, I would truly appreciate that. Today we have a lovely, lovely guest who has actually been on before, but we had some technical difficulties. So this is take two. But I'm still so, so, so happy we're doing this. We have Jocelyn Castillo on the show. Jocelyn, I would love for you to introduce yourself to the listeners.
Hi, my name's Jocelyn Castillo. I am, professionally, I am an engineer where I work with our company's fixed asset integrity program. And outside of that, I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I have been practicing for about a little over 11 years now. I am a brown belt. And I also am a novice firearms enthusiast. That's it.
I'm sure it's hard to keep track because you do so many things. But yes, the firearms industry is kind of how I found you. And then I clicked on your page and I was like, oh my gosh, she does jiu-jitsu. And not only just does jiu-jitsu, you take it seriously. So we need more women like you in this community. And I'm honored to have met you and to have taken some of your incredibly precious time today on this episode. We have some incredible topics we're going to discuss today. I don't typically throw this out there before we start the episode, but I've been actually inspired by the way the Concealed Carry podcast with Riley Bowman and Jacob Paulson do their episodes. They like to kind of discuss the topic beforehand, and I think it's a nice little precursor. Speaking of, they just released season 9, episode 27, with me as the guest speaker. If you guys have a moment, go check it out. There are so many other incredible episodes there, but that one was a lot of fun if you want to hear me stammer through the questions that Riley threw my way. So all that to say, today we will be talking about Jocelyn's journey in jiu-jitsu. I'm incredibly excited to hear her story on how she went from a hobbyist to a competitor, and then also kind of how she started getting into firearms and how that world has been kind of bridged for her in the process. So starting out, Jocelyn, I would love to know your origin story. When did you start jiu-jitsu? Why did you start? And then where have you gone from there?
Well, I started jiu-jitsu, I think late 2012. It's kind of a funny story. I had, I had some friends that did jiu-jitsu, but so I knew about it beforehand. I just never tried it before. And it wasn't until full disclaimer, I'm a bit of a nerd. So, I had to say it because of where this kind of led me to. So I had gone to a comic book convention of all places. It was the first time that they were having this particular one here in Houston. And one of the guest speakers, that was attending, his name is Jason David Frank. And at the time, Jason David Frank, I grew up watching him in the Power Rangers.
That's awesome.
And he was a Green Ranger. So, at the time he was doing, mixed martial arts fights. So he was an MMA fighter. He did jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai and all that. And so He usually would bring a massive crowd at all his events. And I guess maybe there wasn't a great marketing team or whatever for the entire event. So there was a small turnout. And so there was a small group of us, or at least smaller, relatively speaking. And so he had his Q&A, he had his panel. And after the fact, he was like, well, you know, there's a few of us. We can actually go to the side in this open area and I can show you guys a few Muay Thai moves, right? And so he paired us all up. And he was going from person to person, correcting people. And when it came around to me, he asked me, oh, do you train? And it was very genuine and very like nonchalant. And I was like, oh, no, I don't. And he's just like, are you sure? Because I know some people tend to lie about their training. But I told him, yeah, I don't train. And he's like, well, it looks like you train. And then that's when I kind of had that spark of maybe I might be good at this. Maybe I should check it out. And so after that, I kind of got curious. And then I started looking at academies near me. And I had a friend from one that was local to me reach out. And he said, hey, come check it out. I tried every single class that I could. I did jiu-jitsu, MMA training, and every single class that I could take. And I instantly fell in love with it. And I've pretty much been training ever since. And yeah, that's kind of like what got me started, and I just kind of did it as a hobby. I did like the self-defense aspect of it, so that's what kind of kept me into it. So I had already made the decision to sign up or to that it was something that I wanted to do, but it wasn't. I had like maybe like a month gap before I actually made it official, and then my older brother was actually on a date, and they tried to mug him and his date.
Oh,
and so, when he obviously took care of, the young lady that he was with. But after he, had mentioned that, it was very eye opening. And I thought, okay, I definitely need to make the move. Let's do it. And I just kind of, hit the ground running and just started training after that. And I have been fairly consistent since then.
Absolutely.
So,
wow. Yeah. It's like everything was pushing you in that direction and you couldn't like avoid
Absolutely.
It at some point. How incredible that you took that and turned it into something amazing. And now you're sharing your journey and it's inspiring others, including myself. Anytime I see your jiu-jitsu content, I'm like, damn it, I need to train. Like, this, it's time. I need to get back into it. Or I need to go, like, another day this week, you know, and not just my one or two days. Anyway, so...
Yeah, I do want to mention that. I remember when we first discussed it, it was something that you mentioned that you wanted to start getting back into. And it's awesome to see that's something that you are doing. So that's pretty
Thank
cool.
Thank you.
See.
That's so encouraging. I really appreciate that. Yes. I finally, same thing kind of happened. Not in the sense that there was something, you know, terrifying, but I just got to a place where I was telling enough people to get into it. And I was like, I can't do this anymore where I'm like not doing the thing I'm promoting. So anyway, so yeah. Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. Seriously. As far as you said, you mentioned different types of combatives, so MMA and stuff like that. What mm-hmm. caused you to stick with jiu-jitsu the most? Or do you do MMA as much? I don't know if you do.
I used to.
Okay.
So when I first started training, I was doing MMA training and jiu-jitsu combined. Oh. And I did have the aspiration to do at least like one amateur fight, just kind of cross it off my bucket list. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do that. So I'd like to think I was pretty fearless and I was in training and I would get hit and I wouldn't care, but my body was telling me that I am not unstoppable and I'm not unbreakable. So, long story short, I ended up getting two detached retinas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
One I was able to recover from surgically. Yeah. This the first one, not so much. So, not so fun little fact. I am permanently blind on the right side, partially permanently blind on the right side of my eye. on like the dead center of my vision.
Wow.
So after the second retina detachment, my doctor was like, well, I also have a degenerative condition. So it was kind of a matter of when, not if. So it was just bound to happen. And I guess thankfully because of my training, I was able to find out sooner. So that was cool. Not cool, but I guess more informative,
sure,
I guess. Yeah. And he was just like, well, if you want to protect your vision, maybe not do striking. And I was just like, oh, okay. And it really took a lot of, I don't know, it was something that I definitely wanted to keep training, but I had to really humble myself and just understand that maybe it's not something that I need to be doing. So after that, I just pretty much stuck to jujitsu. And, you know, there's less opportunity to get struck in the face.
Yes.
And so just, for the protection of my vision, I just decided to, cut off MMA training and just stick with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Absolutely. I just want to say thank you for sharing that here on this podcast, because I'm sure it's not easy to revisit. And I can't tell you how many resources I searched just trying to hear someone's story of not being able to fight because of an injury. When I broke my nose and had two surgeries, I also could not fight, and it broke my heart. Like, I wanted to do that so badly. And I remember researching like nose break recovery, nose break MMA, or facial injury, and nothing was on the web. So at the time, this was, you know, 5 years ago, but to hear your story and to know that others are going to hear it and maybe are going through something similar is incredibly empowering. So thank you for sharing that. Before we move on, because I'd love to explore this a little bit more with you, what was that process like emotionally for you to like leave that behind and then kind of transition? Do you feel like you fulfilled that desire through competitive BJJ or what?
Well, I was also, during the time, this time frame, I was also really occupied with school. Mm-hmm. I was going to school for engineering.
Yeah,
so
no
that
biggie.
Really took a lot of my time. So it wasn't that much of a big deal, because I started reducing the amount of time that I was doing that type of training.
Right,
so
okay.
It was kind of a relatively smooth transition.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was able to dedicate a little bit more time for school, rather than training. And so. I think at the end of the day, it kind of balanced it all, but, I still kind of had the itch to do striking. So I sometimes do go in there. Like, it's been a while, but, I've had, I've crossed to the other side of the mat
right.
and done some Muay Thai training,
nice.
But I do have to be very, purposeful mm-hmm. of the way I'm communicating with my training partners.
Yes.
And I tell them, hey, please don't hit this area. And I promise it's not, I don't want to get hit in the face. It's, I don't want to potentially lose my vision.
Right.
So I kind of had to explain
mm-hmm.
that a little bit beforehand, and they're totally understanding. So I'm still kind of able to, get a little bit of the training, but, perhaps not as much as I would like to.
Right.
But, it's been a fairly good balance of that.
Absolutely. And I'm sure at this point with just the rote memorization of, you know, throwing like a jab cross, elbows, knees, and just moving around someone, all of that, if you needed to use it in a fight, I'm sure that would come back immediately
mm-hmm.
and you would just be on it. I think about that a lot. Like,
that is
right?
the goal.
It's,
I don't want to forget it.
Exactly. So. Absolutely. And I totally understand that itch. And it's empowering to hear that you do that and that you emphasize communication with your partners. I don't think that's something anyone ever taught me. I just got to a place where it was either like, don't train or just tell everyone about your nose break and make sure they don't do it again for you. And then put them through that trauma. Cause I've had to do that a few times. People have felt really bad from that. Do you ever feel nervous in that process? Or is it something that you just kind of, you've done enough now where you're like, it's no biggie for me to tell someone to be careful with me.
Yeah, it's not a big deal
awesome.
For me. At first I felt a little nervous, bringing it up, but now it's just a matter of fact. And, I'm prioritizing my health at that point and my well-being. So, it's just one of those matter of fact things where, hey, this is a situation. If I would really appreciate it if, you know, XYZ, and they're super understanding. And at this point, a lot of my training partners kind of know that history. So they're pretty mindful of that. So that's been pretty good.
Absolutely. That's exciting. In fact, this just happened the other night, so I want to tell you about this. This really sweet girl, she has her white belt is like almost brown from like how long she's had it. And she has like all these stripes. My white belt was like not as
time for an upgrade.
Oh, right. I know. I'm just like waiting. Like the clock is just ticking. She's about to get her blue belt. But, I think she is based on like how I know they promote at my gym. And she came up to me all excited and she was like, let's do this. Let's roll. And I was like, oh no, it's okay. Like I only roll with this one person because she has to wear this like helmet. And I hold up the helmet and she was like, okay. And like grabs it and just puts it on. And she's like, let's do this. And I was like, oh my God. So I like rolled with like a new person and I didn't realize like other people would be open to doing that for me. But it's incredible how like the community has come together and like another woman was like, you know, I'll put that on for you, right? Like we can roll with that. Like I don't mind because I can't just wear it. They have to wear it too. Otherwise there's like really hard plastic on mine. So if it hits their face, it could harm them. So I don't allow, ask people to roll with me unless they have protection as well.
Yeah.
All that to say, I love that you said everyone around you kind of knows it and that it's easy to communicate that now. It says a lot about like the jiu-jitsu community, which is like such a thing. And like, if you know, you know, kind of thing. But yes.
Absolutely.
So speaking of, I'm not trying to take over here, but that did just happen last night. So it's fresh on my mind. I'd love to know when you started getting curious about competition and what that looks like. And for those that don't know, what belt are you right now?
I am a brown belt. I was promoted back in December.
That's incredible. That's awesome. I wanted to make sure you said it because I don't know if we've said it. Just to show how truly dedicated you are. I mean, you don't just like end up with the jiu-jitsu brown belt. You don't just end up with one unless you buy one off of, you know, the internets, but incredibly impressive. So anyway, take it away. Tell us your story.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I'm so sorry.
How did you go from like the hobbyist part of jiu-jitsu to your competitive journey?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, well, I did compete a few times as a blue belt. And then that was around the time that I was going to school. So I didn't really prioritize that. Obviously school was my main priority at the time. But once I graduated, I had, more flexibility to, train more with that purpose. I started, competing more as a, purple belt. The first year that I started engaging more in competition, it wasn't the greatest. I lost a lot and, learned from a lot of my losses. There was a lot of things that I needed to account for, in terms of like, point systems and also mentally speaking. Before I started competing, I didn't really train, with the point system in mind because that's how you can win in a competition. And, you could either win via, points or you can win via submission, and submission pretty much, outranks any points that sit. So you could have like 15-0, but then if the other person has a submission, like the person that does the submission is, the clear winner at that point. So that's just, two ways that you can, win a competition.
Yes.
So I didn't really, think about it when I first started training, regarding the point system. And I started, being more mindful of that when I was training. And just making sure that, when I got into a position, I made sure that I had to, that I held a position as well as, securing the position. That is something that I worked on. And then along that, I also worked on my, I guess my mental, on the mental aspect of that. Like, I remember when I first started getting into it again, I would straight up have anxiety attacks on the mat. Yeah. And I didn't realize, essentially my body was shutting down. I would lose circulation on my fingers. I would lose circulation on my toes. I would lose my hearing. And then sometimes my vision would start blocking out. Mind you, this is without being in a submission, caught in a choke, right, or anything like that. I remember, I was actually on the bottom one time, and I looked up at my fingers and I wiggled them around, and cause in my mind, I was just like, okay, I'm just checking that my fingers are there. Right. And I'm like, okay, yeah, they're there. I just can't feel them. And in my mind, it was just something that I internalized. But after the fact, one of my coaches was like, hey, what was this about? And I was like, oh, I was checking if I could feel my fingers, or like if my fingers were still there. Obviously I knew they were there,
but
it was just in the moment. Yeah. I was just kind of dealing with that. And I described what I was experiencing at the time. And he was just like, oh, your body is going on a fight or flight mode. On top of that fight or flight mode, there's also freezing, and it's essentially what my body was doing. I was going on full survival mode and like rushing all the blood from basically to my main, to my core, essentially. And so, I didn't like that feeling. In terms of self-defense purposes, you know, if you're ever in a situation like that, I kind of correlated that feeling to, God forbid, if I were ever in a situation in the real world, I wouldn't want to just shut down and, freeze, right? So because I didn't like that feeling, I decided, well, it's very uncomfortable, but I want to do this so that I can work my way out of that zone. Be able to, you know, stay in the game, mentally speaking. And, I've done it, often enough to where I'm able to, I mean, it still kind of occurs where I get the jitters, and I think everybody does, but at this point, I think I'm, better at managing it, and I'm able to have fun at this point. And I also remind myself, like, I go in there with a more of a gratitude, mindset where I get to do this, you know, and, it's a process that I'm enjoying now. And so, it's been a journey, but I like where it's heading and where I'm at now.
Wonderful. Truly. And, I'd love, as far as, you know, the progress you've made, not that you had those moments, but it sounds like you've found a solution. And as far as the timeline goes between the first freeze and now you enjoying it, what does that timeline look like?
So, I started competing more often back in like 2022. This was, after I had done a sheepdog response training. So, I know I mentioned it last time in the previous time that we met, but, they had shown us, the Cooper's code of self-awareness. So there's five different levels: white, yellow, orange, red, and black. Just to describe the four levels, white is unaware, unprepared, tuned out, and, yellow is relaxed, prepared, aware, good situational awareness. Orange is identify potential threat, ready to act, war gaming, possible reactions. Red is you're taking action, you're high alert, you're actively engaged, and you are in an emergency response. And black is panic, frozen, in shock, caught off guard, broken down mentally and physically. So that's essentially where I was finding myself, in the black zone. And, I, I wanted to work my way out of that. And after I started competing, I wanted to have more practice of getting out of that zone. When I started doing that, I still lost, but I saw those small little victories of I didn't shut down. You know, I was more engaged. And after each competition that I was doing, I was getting better and better at managing that and making sure that I was staying in the game. I wasn't, even though I was in a bad position, I didn't let that, sort of take over. I knew that I can work my way out of that. I just needed to, you know, take a step back and reassess where I was at. And either I was down in points or, I needed to escape from a possible submission. So I just kind of worked through that. The first year, it essentially took me a year. It might take other people maybe faster or longer. But it was something that I worked through for a year. And then come 2023, I actually started seeing more success. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of around the time that I started enjoying the process. I was able to, find myself, being more, self-aware mm-hmm. of like where I was mentally speaking in a match. And just really being able to practice of getting out of the black zone, so to speak. Yeah. And I was more on around like the, between like yellow, orange and okay. red, which is, you know, so I worked on that and I've essentially just have gotten better throughout the years. And I had a pretty good year last year. I did win a lot of my competitions, via submission. I did have some losses, but the losses that I did have were via points. I think I had like two submission losses that I had. One that I can think of, it was a 3-woman bracket. I was in the absolute division with other women from different weight classes, also purple mm-hmm. belts. And I went in there. I got a takedown. I passed guard. So I got points for the takedown and the pass. And then I ended up getting caught in a submission. Mm-hmm. And, because it was a 3-woman bracket, the winner of each match would go for the championship. And, after losing that, I was like, okay, well, that's really unfortunate. But when my coaches told me, you still have a chance to win gold if you win the next one and you win the following one. And so I was like, okay, I went in there with a game mm-hmm. plan and with a certain mindset. And I ended up winning my second match. And so I, you know, the winner of this match and the winner of the previous match go for the championship. And I ended up doing this pretty much the same thing, getting a takedown and going to pass the guard. And I went into mount pretty much within the first minute of the match. And I ended up winning that. And I ended up getting double gold when I did that competition. So I was really happy about that. Even though I came with a loss, I ended up winning it overall. So I think having that, like change in mindset too yeah. has really helped a lot, but also like on top of thinking about it that way, also changing the mindset of more of a in terms of like gratitude yes. and just it's something that I get to do. And I'm, like really grateful that I get to compete in this sport. I think that's also really been helpful and, has been a great part of my journey of, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
In jiu-jitsu competition, yeah.
Absolutely. SOG Knives began with the mission to reproduce the original SOG Bowie knife used by the Special Ops Unit MACV SOG. Today, SOG Knives are carried with confidence into the most demanding situations. Forged out of tradition, hardened in the field, honed for you, whether you're protecting others or leading an epic hunting expedition, tackling one of life's everyday challenges, or facing your most extreme conditions yet, lead the way with SOG. What began as a single commemorative model soon became a full line of innovative tools, field proven by U.S. Special Forces, even honored as the Navy SEAL knife of choice. I've personally carried SOG knives since I added knives to my everyday carry setup, and have yet to be disappointed by their design and durability. Their craftsmanship is rooted in legacy of honor and courage, and is unmatched. With SOG by your side, you are equipped to lead the way, no matter the challenge. Join the ranks of those who dare to push beyond limits and define their own legacy, and use code SHESHIELD to support the pod and to save. That's SHESHIELD at checkout. I love what you said. I wrote it down because I didn't want to forget it. You said it was still a victory. Like, you didn't win, but the fact that your hands didn't freeze, that was a victory for me. And mm-hmm. I think that concept is not discussed enough. It doesn't get the attention it deserves. I relate it to when I'm at USPSA matches and some of these guys, and of course, I don't know their intentions for competing. I don't know their backstory. I don't know what's going on in their head. But I see them walk off a stage and they'll like kick the ground. They'll like sometimes throw a mag. They'll be like, you know, they'll cuss really loud. And my first match before I read with winning in mind, I kind of like did that in my head. I'd kick the ground metaphorically and, you know, cuss at myself. And I got to where like now I focus on little victories and it makes the world of a difference. And it's I'm so glad to hear. I love the way you put it. I feel I need to steal that from you. But I think it's great that and such a treat that we get to hear your mental game story. So thank you for sharing that. And yes, I'm glad you brought back up the sheepdog response experience. That was a really cool portion of our first take of this episode months ago. So I'm glad you remembered that. That's awesome. As far as jiu-jitsu goes, I know not to like harp too much on your injury. Do you feel like it's pretty safe when you're competing? As far as like protecting your eye area, has anything ever come across your face where you've been like, oh my gosh, I'm just curious. And this is honestly a selfish question because I don't know. I'd like to think I could compete one day, even though I don't think I could. So
in competition, I haven't had a situation where I've been concerned over my eyes. However, I have during training for competition. Gotcha. Because it gets a little bit more intense. Yes. I was training with one of my female teammates and oh my God, bless her heart. She was so like, we were both kind of like in panic mode when it happened, but it was just kind of a freak accident. I think she moved really fast and like the tip of her fingers brushed over my eyes. And, it was done so fast that I my vision blacked out like on that side. And I had a little bit of a panic. Oh, yeah. Mode. And it was a little scary at the moment. Really? But I was like trying to breathe. Yes. Through it and calm myself down. And I was trying to, in my mind, I was trying to recall. So I had a LASIK surgery a couple years ago. And one of the things that I remembered is that when your eyes experience a high level of pressure, during the procedure, your vision does black out a little bit and it comes back slowly. And I did research before I went in there, right? Before I had the surgery. So I knew that going in and I knew that, I knew what to expect throughout the process. So whenever that happened during training, I was like, okay, just, you know, breathe a little bit. I started thinking about that process and, kind of comparing it to that. And I was just kind of trying to calm myself and just breathe through it and to just kind of let it play out. And then eventually I could start seeing my vision kind of slowly come back. And I was like, okay, I think I'm good. But that's about one of the few times that, I had, an uh-oh situation where I was like, oh, this could possibly be, something bad, but it ended up not being anything. But, during competition, it's not something that I've really been concerned about for the most part. But yeah, during training, accidents can happen, especially, you know, I've been training for a while. It's bound to happen, right? But I do have to be more mindful of that while I'm training.
Absolutely. And again, totally selfish of me to ask because I'm just curious. I am truly inspired how you have, like, you didn't just give up this journey. You were like, no, I'm going to adapt. I'm going to figure this out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to communicate. And then now you're on top. You're just double gold. Oh my gosh. So cool. I didn't know there was double gold. I didn't know that was a thing. So, but that makes sense. That's, that's truly so amazing. Kind of pivoting here, and don't get me wrong. If you have anything else come up about competition or the mental game, please mm-hmm. feel free to go back to that topic. So as far as how you, just based on your social media, you like to encourage others, from what I can see and observe, to become serious about their self-defense journey. So how have you kind of adapted jiu-jitsu for your personal self-defense? And I just want to clarify, obviously jiu-jitsu is, you know, incredible for self-defense, but past that, like, are there things that you do in training? Are there certain moves that you emphasize and really do a ton of repetitions for because they're more applicable to self-defense? Or are you mostly competition focused? I just asked like 5 questions. So just pick one of those and let's go.
Oh my gosh. So I guess at the moment, there isn't something, since I'm really focused on competition, mm-hmm. I do mostly focus on right. that, but, I don't know. I guess part of that practice has been whenever I've done like the sheepdog response training or, this other training that I had with, one of my, was one of my coaches. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a combination with my coach and another black belt and one of my teammates. They all have a military background, and they had a training at this facility in Texas, I can't remember where. Anyway, I got to train with them, and so it was a combination of like firearms training with combatives, and that's something that I've also been engaging in. And when I practice self-defense, it's almost apart from my competition training, because some things that I do in competition may not necessarily be applicable to the self-defense aspect. Like, I'm not gonna go in a self-defense scenario and do like X guard, you know,
even though it'd be dope.
And so it would be. And hey, if I could, that would be really cool. But yeah. It you do have to kind of shift gears a little bit. It's for me, I would use jiu-jitsu in focusing on like either controlling the other person or being able to get out of a certain situation or like a certain position. And it's actually one of the things that I've wanted to do recently. I talked to a few of my teammates, where I wanted to practice more, self-defense, training. And I actually I have this, like mock firearm.
Ooh, okay.
I think you have one too, where I want to bring it into training and be able to drill with it. So it's something that I need to move on to. So, that's kind of, in my future. That's kind of a goal. I did it a little bit, but I wasn't as consistent, but that's something that I definitely want to get more consistent with in my training.
Okay. I'm trying not to freak out, but, I was just saying this on the episode with Riley Bowman, the one I mentioned at the beginning of this episode. I was telling him how there are not enough women, including myself. I need to do my work and become one of those women in the industry that are bridging the gap between rolling and shooting, like that weapon space entanglement gap. And, mm-hmm. And you know what? It could totally be a lack of knowledge on my part. I feel the need to say this, that like there may be other people out there and I just haven't met them. I haven't seen their content. I don't know where they are. But you would shine. Like, oh my gosh. Like, yes, please do that. If you ever, and if you can get into an extreme close quarter concepts course by Craig Douglas, it just depends on like where you're at. That would be an excellent place to do that. He's not the only person. He has an entire team, the Shivworks Collective. Also, if you find one you want to go to, let me know and I will come to that one too. And then we can go together and I would be beside myself. But anyway, if you want to do that, but yes, getting an inert pistol, throwing it in your waistband and then seeing how that changes things, just that alone is eye-opening. And then you get to where you're like, you start asking yourself questions of like, oh yeah, what do I do from here? And then you can take those questions with you to a course once you get there. And that's much better than just jumping in like I did, although you can do that as well. But yeah, good for you. That is so exciting. Yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So since we're kind of pivoting naturally here to, I didn't even need to say that, but I did, to the firearms talk, what got you interested in that? Firstly, I'll give you one question first.
Okay. So what got me into firearms? So I guess I shot my first firearm when I was probably like 21 and that was pretty much about it. And, I didn't really get back into it until years later. My boyfriend for the longest time wanted to get me to start carrying, a firearm, but I was kind of hesitant about it. And it wasn't until I was followed in my vehicle twice before. And I thankfully I was able to get out of the situation, but, at the moment I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to get kidnapped, or I don't know what their intention is, but it doesn't feel like it's a good intention. So after I had two scenarios like that in a matter of 3 months, apart, I was like, okay, I definitely need to start carrying a firearm. I didn't really carry on my body. I just, like carried, in my vehicle, cause that's something that you can do in Texas.
Right.
I really carried it in my vehicle and that was pretty much the extent of it. It was just kind of like sitting right there. And it wasn't until I like had another face-to-face encounter with somebody, where I was like, okay, well, and again, it didn't escalate to anything, but it could have potentially been something. And that's when I made the realization where, okay, maybe I need to not just carry it with me in my vehicle. Maybe I need to carry it on my body. So I started transitioning into that, into carrying it on my body. And after that, I figured that I need to be more skilled in being able to carry it on my body. So I wanted to learn more and, that kind of naturally, had a natural progression of, having more firearms training. And that's kind of where that led me to do like sheepdog response training. I also went to the WAF facility as well in Florida.
Very nice.
It's where our families train. And I started kind of getting, more into that type of training. Just so that I could be more well-equipped and more confident in the way that I carry on my day-to-day basis. So that's kind of what my journey has been in firearms.
Yes. Thank you seriously for sharing that again with your vulnerability. I so sorry you had a couple situations that encouraged you. I hate, that's not the word. Encouraged.
Yeah.
Is it negative reinforcement? What is it? Or positive reinforcement? I can't remember. No, it's negative reinforcement. Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to find the right word here to kind of start your journey with firearms. As far as your experience getting into it, what were some resources that were really big for you that helped you out between like social media, blogs, instructors around you?
One of the biggest resources, at least to get me started. I know you had mentioned this in one of your previous episodes with Lisa of like not getting your boyfriend or your significant other to help you. I actually did. I was pretty receptive of his help. So he kind of, helped me out a little bit. And then he kind of just kind of set a good foundation. Yeah. And then after that, I was like, okay, well, I want to learn more on my own. And I just went off and like started learning a lot of things on my own. I did use your account as a reference. So you're really helpful on that. And there are a few others that other few ladies that I follow too. Where I, started kind of getting, advice from. So I do thank you for that.
You've been absolutely amazing. It also horrifies me. I'm like, what did you see? Because I've taken some stuff down since. I'm just kidding.
No. It's all been great. Good. It's all been pretty helpful. And yeah, there's a few other ladies and I had a chance to meet some of those recently, some of those ladies recently. So I was able to communicate that to them and thank them for being a part of my journey.
That's awesome.
So yeah, that's kind of what I utilized as a kind of a guide on like what path to take and like the different resources.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's
good to know. I always like to ask that question because a part of She Shield and its purpose is to bring kind of be like a resource hub. I'm actually starting a page on my website. I'm about to release that. I keep saying that, but I keep holding on to it because it's not ready yet, but I just need to let it go. I'm just going to have like a full resource page of like all the training centers I know of and like where they're located and like just try to do that from the perspective of a female too, because I feel like it's important for us to kind of vouch for each other, like certain instructors and even like training techniques and ideas or even like gear out there. So all that to say, first of all, thank you for saying that and for again sharing your story. As far as your training goes with like sheepdog response and whatnot, what is that kind of, what door has been opened for you from there when it comes to self-defense? What have you realized that you want to learn more of that you maybe have like a gap in your knowledge with and you're excited to kind of learn more with?
First off, I was able to learn. I had a huge gap before I attended those training courses. I did their Protector One training and their carbine training as well. And I had a baseline of knowledge, but going to those trainings was really helpful, and I was able to elevate my knowledge in that. I was able to learn more drills that I could practice on my own. So it was really eye-opening, but it was something that that I'm like pretty grateful to have experienced, because I was able to gain a lot of knowledge from that. But also I was able to meet other people that are seeking that type of education and in just other people in that community as well.
That's wonderful. Absolutely. And not to give you whiplash, but I'd love to kind of go back to we were talking for the listener, we were talking before the episode, how we both like to kind of like go between topics and some people get whiplash from that. But it works out perfectly because we both get it. So back to the BJJ thing, because I don't want to gloss over this. You have so much knowledge in that area. You're so empowering. This is an incredible opportunity to talk about the process and what it looks like for someone getting into it. I've recently had quite a few women reach out and with the same question, which makes me feel like I need to make it just like a YouTube video about it and I can send it to them. But it's like, should I do MMA or Muay Thai or Jiu-Jitsu or Krav? And I'm always like, oh my gosh, like, I have to think every single time, because typically I say like it kind of depends on like what those places are like. Like, go check those places out first of all. Like, not every gym is equal. I'd rather go to a really good Krav gym than go to like a really just like bad BJJ gym instructors, the community, the, you know, etiquette, all that stuff. So that's like one of the things I mentioned. But if someone were to come with you to you with that question, what would you say? We'll start there.
Well, I think I'm a little biased, but I would say jiu-jitsu, hands down jiu-jitsu. I think as women, we, unfortunately, there have been women that have had previous assaults or been victims of assaults. And I think, and mind you, one that does occur, sometimes it's someone that you may know, right? And so it's more of a close, I guess in a more intimate setting. So learning, jiu-jitsu and learning how to move in whenever you're in the most vulnerable positions, I think it's really empowering for a woman. I did have, I've hosted a few women's self-defense seminars before, to women who have had zero knowledge. And I had a few questions, from this one, participant, and she kept asking me a lot of questions. And she was kind of like, oh, well, that's not going to work. And I, you know, I had her try it with, this guy that was helping me in the class, and he was like 200 plus pound guy. And I was able to apply that same move to him. And she was just like kind of taken aback of how easy it was. And she was just like, oh, that's, you know, when she saw it demonstrated, she was curious, but at the same time, she was a little hesitant until she tried it herself. And whenever she tried it, she was like, it was like a light bulb in her head, and like it was like her mind was almost blown, right? And she had another follow-up question where so the position was when somebody has you on mount, and I showed her how to escape that, and then I demonstrated this move. This was from someone being mounted on you, right? And I showed it was an escape from mount, and she had a follow-up question where, well, what happens if both of your arms are pinned underneath the guy? And she's just like, it's a very vulnerable position. And I said, well, actually, it's more beneficial for you because you have more leverage. And she just couldn't understand that. And once I demonstrated her how powerful that was, and she tried it herself, I literally saw like tears falling like down her cheeks. And that's when I realized she had a prior experience where she was in that position. And when after the seminar was over, she talked to me about it. She didn't get into detail, but I could sense that she was, she did say how she was at a party and she was taken by these two guys, and they basically took her to the middle of nowhere, and they were beating her, and her arms were on her side. And when she realized that she was a lot more powerful in that position, she got really emotional. And that's one of the things that I wish more women knew, is that there's a lot of leverage that you have, and you don't realize how your body can move until it's not something that you're like automatically gonna know. So being able to practice that and practice those vulnerable positions, you don't realize how much your body is capable of until you try it. So if it's something that you're hesitant to try, I say do it. And if you still don't feel comfortable, you can also talk to your coach, to the coach about it, and just say like, this, whether you had a past trauma or not, and he can also pick certain partners for you as well. So that's something that you can try as well. So, in terms of, just women that are wanting to try it. I think looking at the culture of how gyms treat their beginners and are how you treat the other women that train there.
What you said is so important. The communication of a previous, of someone who's been a victim in a gym, that is not something that has ever been discussed on the podcast. So thank you for bringing that up. I didn't even think to bring that up. And so I love what you said. Talk to the instructor, have them choose partners for you. And I'd love to know on this same topic before we move on, or the same question before we move on to the next one. How do you feel about turning down a request for someone to roll with you if you don't feel comfortable? What is your process for that?
So that's one of the things that they actually let the ladies know in my academy. And that's actually one of the things that I really appreciate. From our female black belts, we actually have two female black belts that that we train under. So that's pretty incredible. Because, well, now they're more easy to come across, but I'm super fortunate that I get to train with another female black belt. But anyway, back to the question. So that's one of the things that she always says to us and every woman that comes in. If you don't feel comfortable, it's okay to say no. You don't have to train, you don't have to accept a role if you don't feel comfortable. If there is, if you do feel uncomfortable, you can also, like I mentioned before, you can reach out to your coach and, he or she can say, okay, I've selected maybe like five people and these are good people to train with. You can do that. I also highly recommend, to train with an upper belt because they're a lot more controlled rather than, a female training with a male white belt, just because there's, when you're training with a higher belt, there is more control and more self-awareness. So I would say if you're a lady that's trying it out for the first time, there's nothing wrong with asking a higher belt to train, and they totally understand. They totally get it. So that's kind of the culture that we have at our gym. And actually on that note, I mean, it's kind of not on the note, but sort of in the topic, one of the things that I really appreciate about my academy is that our coach, whenever he promotes somebody as to a black belt, he actually requires them to do a background check, because you don't want to have someone that is an authoritative power in the academy, like a coach, to either have like something in their background, right? Because unfortunately, there have been some of those cases before. Yeah. And so the fact that my coach requires everybody who's going to get promoted to black belt to have a background check, I think it's the gold standard. And I think that every academy should do that. I like to brag about that.
Wow. I'm in shock. So yeah, that is incredible. That is incredible. Seriously, I've never heard of that. I don't normally hear, though, about Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts ending up in jail. Like, that's not a very common thing. But if I did, you know, that would be concerning.
Right. Yes. And that's the thing. It's like all walks of life, yes, can train under, you know, can train jiu-jitsu. And you never know who's going to be training. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like, I don't really hear that, but like, I've heard where, either coaches have taken advantage, like you see it all the time, like in gymnastics or, you know, like where that opportunity is present. So I think that that's one of the things that, our academy prides on is proud of, that we kind of set our students at a higher standard. And that's something that our coach requires. So
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So yes, this is a topic so far that I have actually only presented on two episodes, one with Andrew Henry of Henry Holsters, and now with you, about the position, the authoritative position that instructors and black belts are put in. Mm-hmm. And for those listening who aren't familiar with this, even if there's a black belt in the gym and they're not instructing, they are seen as someone to go ask questions to, and they sometimes will walk around mm-hmm. and help out. They may even be the kind of partner for the instructor to show a technique on. So they kind of have this natural status in the hierarchy. So if mm-hmm. you're listening and you're kind of wondering, hopefully that clears that up. So thank you for sharing that firstly. And I actually, I was definitely taken advantage of by an instructor before when I was younger. And I did not realize his intentions until later on when I was older. And I mistook it for a lot of things. And it was a very unhealthy process. And it's been hard to talk about. I'm not going to lie. I was even on a phone call with an acquaintance not too long ago, and I had told her about it, and it felt very judgmental in nature. I explained how old I was, and it still was it wasn't taken well. And she's a martial artist too, and that's kind of how we've stayed in contact over the years. And it was interesting. And I don't think people realize how vulnerable you are. And I actually only told her because she's a martial artist, but, I don't think people realize it's an authority position like any other. And these mm-hmm. parents don't know where they're sending their kids sometimes. They don't scout the place out. I mean, my nieces are about to join jiu-jitsu. They just recently came to me and explained that they were being bullied at school, and I don't want to go to jail, so I'm taking them to jiu-jitsu instead. And so get this. One of the girls that is being a bully, she does jiu-jitsu, so my niece is afraid of her. I want to find out where she goes. I'm not even kidding you. I'm thinking about digging. Yeah. Because my niece is, and I know I'm obviously, very biased over here, but I don't know how anyone could be mean to her. I mean, she's so sweet, it hurts. So anyway, that aside, I'm not going to go on a tangent too much right now, but.
It's really unfortunate when people take advantage of that.
Yes. As don't mess with me.
It's just something to be mindful about. Yeah. And it's, so, I'm obviously very anti-bullying. Yes. And I really don't like whenever someone uses, you don't want to give someone who has that, sort of predator type of, not mindset, but just but you don't want to give someone more power.
Yes, I know
to
what you're saying.
Be able to. Yeah. Okay. And so, whenever you mention that, this guy, comes to mind. His name is Tom DeBlas.
Okay.
And he's a jiu-jitsu black belt, and he's a huge advocate for, anti-bullying. And he's called people out where they've either been in the jiu-jitsu community and taken advantage of their skills or whatever. But also on the flip side of that, he's also seen where, if a video goes viral and some kid's being bullied, he will reach out to them and, give them training. And I think that is awesome. So cool. And I'm starting to see a lot of that in the community. Yeah. And it just overall, I feel like the jiu-jitsu community really stands up to bullies. I don't know, just they really want to empower people to, not be the victim.
Yes.
Right. So, to be, strong, to be confident. And there's a lot of things that you can gain from jiu-jitsu in general. So
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that inside perspective. The culture is not really one you would think of unless mm-hmm. you go and do it consistently. Mm-hmm. I've been in it so long that it's normal.
And overall, don't get me wrong. I know I mentioned this, but overall, generally speaking, it's a really great culture. Like I've been to academies across the U.S. I actually took a trip back in 2021, where I did a traincation, so to speak, nice. And I gym hop to different, a lot cool. of different, jiu-jitsu academies. Yeah. And everywhere I went, it was like a secondary home. Oh. Even though I didn't know anybody mm-hmm. and I was meeting people for the first time, it was like a family. So that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about it. I remember I had an internship back when I was in school, and I was up in Michigan, and I hey guys, I'm just here to train. And everybody was super nice, super helpful. And I didn't even feel like an outsider because I felt so welcome. Right. So that's been a really awesome experience.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure they were excited to have you. It's always interesting when you consistently train with the same people to have someone come in who's respectful and you can trust with a mm-hmm. role and get to hear about the way their gym does stuff and learn from them. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they were all excited to have you visit as well. That's super cool. That's awesome. Is there anything else that people should look for while we're on the topic when they are joining a jiu-jitsu gym besides you mentioned having two, female black belts? Anything else you can think of?
So what somebody should look at when they're selecting a jiu-jitsu academy to join is, one, do they have a kids program? You want to have someone, you want to go to a place where you can trust your kids to go to. If they have if they have women that are members, it obviously shows that they treat their members well, that women are sticking to it as well. Also how they treat their guests. Whether they're, when you have a person that's visiting the academy and they're just demolishing them, that's not cool. But on the flip side of that, if they have someone who is going in there as a guest and is just completely being a jerk, you typically have your mat enforcers mm-hmm. where they, make sure that is addressed. I don't know. This is going back to, women that are wanting to join jiu-jitsu. One of the things I would say is, if they have women that are members, but sometimes a lot of times there aren't many women that train. Sometimes you could be the only woman that's on the mat. And if it's something you want to do, do it. And, because you might not be, there might not be other women and you might be the only woman that is training, but you could be the reason why another woman that comes in to train sticks to it because they see that another woman has stuck with it. And I think that's super valuable. And especially if you start seeing women that are, blue belts, purple belts, brown and black belts, obviously it's, very motivating to see other women that have stuck with it. More in the long term. So that's one of the things I would say to look into a gym. I know there's so much more to that, but that's kind of what came to mind.
Seriously, all of that was perfect. And I mentioned to you earlier that we've had quite a few people answer this question because I like to see what people come up with. And you just introduced a new perspective. We've talked before on the pod about how if there aren't a lot of women, maybe take that as a sign and don't go. But if everything else is checking out, there's a chance that the mm-hmm. reason there aren't any women is because no one has started that trend. So I love that you introduced that perspective. That's not really something I'd considered before, to be quite frank. So thank you for doing that. And of course, balancing that out with what is your general vibe, right? If the vibes are off,
yes.
Vibes are a thing, aka our gut, our intuition as women and men as well. We all yeah. have a gut. So.
And the reason why I say that is because usually it depends on what area you're looking into. If it's in a city, a big city, there's the chances are there's going to be a lot of women, but sometimes I during my travels, there were academies that were kind of, in low populated areas. Mm-hmm. Chances are there might not be a lot of women that join. So, in that type of scenario, you could be that woman that kind of sets the tone for other women to train. And that's why I bring that up because sometimes it's it could be dependent on that. So
absolutely. Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that. And as someone who has actually traveled between many gyms, I feel really safe with you sharing that perspective. Like I feel like by now you truly have a good, well-rounded sense about that type of thing. So thank you for sharing that. I just know you're going to think of another one later and you're going to be like, damn it, why did I say that? If you do, text it to me. I'll put it in the show notes. But seriously, that was golden. The only other question I have for you today, because you make a point to share your journey in this, and it's so encouraging to me as well, is how do you balance all of the jiu-jitsu and the weightlifting? Because you are also strong as hell. I love seeing your lifting content and your gym updates. I think it's mostly on the stories. I don't scroll as much anymore as much as I go through people's stories now. And I hate it because I end up not supporting people that I care for. It's mostly because once I start scrolling, I can't stop. So I need to turn on my notifications. But all that to say, how do you balance that?
So I do post a lot of my lifting on my stories. I probably should post a lot more on my post. But I'm just kind of like in and out, and I just don't have time to put a post, and I just post it on my story. And, the way I balance it, I try to do lifting on the days that I'm not doing jiu-jitsu. But sometimes, if I'm lucky, I'm able to do training, weight training and jiu-jitsu on the same day. But like I said, it's all about a balance. I have to find like the happy medium where I could do that. It just depends on also how I'm feeling too. I love to train all of it, but I also have to be realistic, and I also have to listen to my body. But for the most part, I lift on the days that I'm not training jiu-jitsu. I recently changed my schedule. I say recently, it's been a few months already, but, where I'm going to, work out in the mornings. Ooh. And that's been really helpful because that's kind of cleared up my evenings. Yeah. And that's when I've been able to do jiu-jitsu in the evenings as well. So, it's really all about, it's a balance. It's, sometimes I'm just like, I don't know how I do it, but I just, here I am.
Absolutely.
I am also doing a jiu-jitsu super fight on April 28th. It will be my first super fight as a brown belt. So I'm really excited about that. And on top of that, it will be broadcasted on the UFC Fight Pass. So you'll be able to watch me compete. And I'm really looking forward
to
that.
So exciting. And for those that don't know, maybe me, what is a super fight?
So it is, not an actual fight. Like it's not an MMA fight. It's just strictly jiu-jitsu. They're going to have, so I'm going to have my walkout and all that. And, so I'm really excited about that. So yeah, it's going to be, April 28th. And, so super fight, no striking or anything like that. So it's just strictly jiu-jitsu, and, it's submission only. That's pretty much it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that. And if you're interested, listener, in watching that, I will link it all in the show notes so you can easily access it today. But how exciting. Thank you for sharing that. Yes. And that's incredibly encouraging that you also kind of have to find that balance for yourself. And it's not just like this, like innate, you know, perfect thing that comes to you. That's really, it's encouraging to hear. Right now it's easy for me. I just do jiu-jitsu once a week is my minimum. I went from zero. So one was like, okay, just get once a weekend. But I'm starting to get to where I'm like, I'm missing so much of the form instruction that like my partner's having to catch me up. And then I don't like making that her responsibility. I also just want to do it more. So I'm trying to get up to two, and I have to start thinking about like, okay, am I overtraining those days? And all of that stuff is coming back, like from when I used to train like 4 or 5 days a week, which was when I was I don't want to say prime, but in one of the primes of my life, just at Sue gym studying. And that's all I had to do. Adulting is fun. So all that to say, thank you for sharing that. So I am so happy with all the material we covered today. Is there anything that you feel like we left out or anything you would at least like to send the listeners off with?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And if there's anything that I can send the listeners with is don't be afraid to do something that is going to be challenging or do something that scares you, because you'll grow so much from that. That's one of the things that I learned from competition is, you know, it was uncomfortable. I kind of, you know, grew from that. So, if there's anything that you want to get into, go for it. Don't think about it. You're never going to be 100% ready. Just go in there, with that mindset of, you know, you're just going to learn as you go. So that's pretty much all. That's how I wanted to wrap it up, I guess.
I love that. Yeah. Beautifully said. Yes. And you are an incredible example of someone that did that. So just, yes, that was a perfect full circle moment. Thank you for coming on. We've been playing episode tag for the last like 3 months. I think like one of us got sick and then one went out of town and then the other one got sick. And I'm thankful that you stuck with me and came back on. Just says a lot about.
And I hope the audio is a lot better this time around.
It is. Too. Yes. We can actually hear you. So I just remember being like, I don't think we could salvage this. And also it's just too many good things. Like your story is so special. I would hate for it to not, like, people not to listen because the audio is bad, you know? So I was really, really grateful and still am grateful that you came back on. So thank you. For anyone.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. Yes. My pleasure. For anyone wanting to look into Jocelyn's socials, we always have that tagged in the show notes, which are the notes below the title. If you're interested in exclusive content, we are revamping our Patreon. So if you're interested in that, you can join now. We'll send you a sticker and a patch along with some more soon to be exclusive things coming your way. We have episode highlights made by Lisa Hamilton, best friend of the pod. You can visit SheShield on Instagram and TikTok for updates, pictures of our guest speakers, podcast highlights, and more at SheShield Pod. All resources in the episode will be linked in the show notes. If you liked the episode, you can help so much by liking, subscribing, and leaving a review. It takes 5 seconds, guys. Please help us get on the charts. And if you or anyone you know is a firearms owner experiencing a crisis, please look into holdmyguns.org. They are an organization that will connect you with a local gun shop or FFL to store your firearm for you. The link to access their website and to find a storage location partner is available in the show notes. In the meantime, stay safe and stay vigilant. Are you ready to step up your shooting game? Introducing Walkers Incorporated, the pioneers in ear protection for shooting, hunting, and commercial applications. For over 25 years, Walkers has been revolutionizing the industry, ensuring your hearing safety and enhancing your shooting experience. Anytime I'm on the range, indoor or outdoor, I use Walkers ear protection to have crystal clear communication with my fellow shooters. I currently use the Silencer 2.0s and the Razor Slims for my range adventures. Not only does Walkers protect your hearing, but they also protect you. Being able to communicate with others on the range is vital to personal safety. You shouldn't have to sacrifice your safety when the ultimate goal is for overall better self-protection. With Walkers, you'll experience unparalleled comfort, unmatched innovation, and the industry standard in shooting ear protection. Never settle for anything less when it comes to your safety and enjoyment on the range. You can save on Walker's ear protection and support the podcast by using code SHEShield. That's SHEShield at checkout.